Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out today. I'm so happy to have Kelly with us today. Kelly is a graduate of our MA and MFA programs, of course, although we couldn't exactly recall the dates, either one of us. It was a while ago. And she's the author of three full-length collections of poetry, and she's an assistant professor of English at Northern Kentucky University. So certainly one of our most accomplished MFA grads, and we're really proud of her and always happy to have her come back. When I arrived in Morgantown in 2002, Kelly was already here, and I think I actually met her husband, Joe, first, and I asked him for some reason about, did he want a cat sit for me, I think, and he volunteered Kelly to do that, and that was the beginning of our friendship, and meeting her and working with her in workshop and becoming true friends ever since has been one of the greatest gifts of my time at WVU. She's my daily email correspondent, one of my first readers, and someone that I always go to with real questions. We talk about real things pretty much every day. And partly that's because from the beginning, Kelly's quest has been a spiritual one, and it's grown more urgent and more beautifully wrought in the poems over the years. Kelly seeks solace in solitude, in nature, and even, perhaps, at last, bravely, with people. And yet there is challenge in that, too, in these same experiences. For any encounter with another, as we know, the cicadas in the yard or the hawk circling overhead, the statue of a saint or an idea left over from childhood about Jesus, one's spouse or child in the next room, each of these, Kelly's poems remind us, is an encounter with God, the self, what was, what is, what might yet be. Please welcome Kelly Moffitt.
Utterly gorgeous. Thank you. Well, thank you, Marianne, for the introduction, your hospitality, and of course for just always being lovely, you. You are such a gift to me, and I look around and I see past professors, and it's just an amazing gift to have you back and to come and listen to me. It's been a long time since I've been back here. Before, you were in Stansbury, and now all of a sudden you have much better digs. This is quite beautiful. My husband and I arrived here when our son was only 10 months old, and we left when he turned 7. So that's how I kind of mark the time. He just turned 17. So that's amazing. I think people remember still when I was trying to carry him around. I feel old. But also grateful for the education that I received here, the lifelong friendships that I made, and the amazing foundation that I was given. When I left, I was 2 years part-time at Kentucky Wesleyan College, and Marianne told me, if they seem like they don't have a need for creative writing, well, then make a need. And so I created a creative writing group, got students excited, and they gave me a tenure-track position. And so I was tenure-track for 2 years before I received the position at NKU. And so, yes, I received the foundation for teaching and advice, and I do hope that when you go out there that you find a way to make a need for creative writing. So I will start with some poems from the book that was released at AWP. Most of the poems were created over a 4-year period when I would do retreats at Trappist monasteries. The main one is at Thomas Merton's Gethsemane Abbey. And when you visit Gethsemane Abbey, you'll see pictures of the Dalai Lama landing in the field on the plane and Thomas Merton going out and meeting him. And to this day, particularly during Compline, you will see Buddhist monks come and sit with the Trappist monks. So it's a beautiful kind of interreligious space. Also, I went to Colorado and was able to stay in a little tiny hermitage and stay with the Trappist monks there. Trappist monks take vows of silence, so every time I went on a retreat from 4 days to a week by myself, I too would take a vow of silence. And I think what I found out most is how loud silence is, right? All the inner talk that ends up happening. So I'll read some poems from this. The first poem's a little snarky, the title, just because, I don't know, mass or something, you know? Fuck metaphor. The priest tells us a sheep drowned from soaking its wool in river water. Was the point that we all grow heavy with thirst? A bell peals, its vigils calling. Above me, 12 disciples hold empty bowls, the most important metaphor of their lives. If I stay long enough here, I will want to lick the years of prayer from the stucco. But outside, a koi steeps, and rain rushes down the monk's hand-dug trenches. So I settle into the belly of the chapel. In the monastery courtyard, water spills from concrete lips, angel hands, a woman's throat. What does it mean to become empty? A squirrel eats my raisins, and my tongue, I think, has tasted the same sweetness. Later, I hear of a monk talk of a cow's labor, and I feel I should know this, because while I slept, a life fell in. See, he says, there is magic too. Devotion. You have become both a wall and a parachute. Just as lichen can be lichen, but also holy food. It's a double-weaved web in that way, this kind of confusion. I see the sign, this way to the statues. Something falls and then gets up, a deer, I guess. And I wish for light glazed with rising steam, for a backhoe digging until there's a pond, because I want some beauty, please. But you are a difficult garden. Throughout the book, I started making up my own saints. so this one is actually my mother, who is the mother of sorrows. releasing the mother of sorrows. I could see your bones nearby. You took your stones in the fashion of Saint Stephen. When you said you would die, I thought you would die, because I believe sorrow could kill in that way. I still do. Your eyes dark as sin, I could have burnished you to a sheen. When I search for traces of what you must have been, even in pictures when you were with child, with me, a small scream was in you. When the god of water enters your basement, bow. You make the sound of a window inhaling spring and illustrate the dimensions of you. Your cheeks full like wax about its wick, and your tongue the wick. Downstairs, the water answers its own stillness. I hear it now. Another kind of strain that's going through this text is trying to understand how I relate with my spouse. So this one is, I guess, both angry but self-realizing. So it's called Then Get in a Boat. When you say sweet pea, I am instantly calmed until I realize you call everyone sweet pea. And then you ask them to stay calm in the same way you ask me, and I realize I am just one of many trying to stay calm and holding your sweet pea each day down the hall, on the pavement, into the crowd on the plaza, and really, there is nothing sweet about peas or you or me for that matter. And so when I get in the boat,
to learn about water as driftwood might, to get into the drift and ignore the muddy bottom and root and snake and swarms of bee now passing overhead. There is no sweet pea in the wind, but there is a dog on the deck, and it's pacing, pacing, just like me, and just like me, right before I enter the shower and clear my head and see that there may have been no other sweet pea more striking than me. So take that. This poem actually came, one of my students did this beautiful project about her grandmother who survived the Holocaust, and she was invited to go to the Holocaust Museum in Quito, Ecuador, and she brought me with her. So we were able to visit much of Quito and outside of Ecuador and work with the Andean school children, and it was just an amazing experience. And so this one is called Virgin Saint of Water. And it just comes from the kind of beautiful experience of at night, sometimes when the fog was out in Quito, so for some reason, the air was green. It just felt magical and maybe a little scary. Is that pollution? What is that? I don't know. I would walk down the streets, and one morning, all these women had big wooden sticks and were knocking fruit out of the trees next to the streets in the middle of the city and offering me fruit. It was just such a beautiful experience. And, of course, Mary's everywhere. And one chapel actually taken, the conquistadors took the gold from the mountains and made gold all along the walls of the chapel. So this is coming from that space. Virgin Saint of Water. The woman in blue holds a skull in her hand and touches the gold arch of the altar with her toe. The skull is her father, or maybe her son, and the altar is gold from the mountains. I tell everyone it's not dry enough, but I don't know what I mean. I'm always two blocks further than I need to be, and the fruit stands all look the same. Each street performer juggles more than the next, and the Andean women circle the cars with their clementines and pass their goods through the windows. And the fog tonight is green, and I don't know why. The child has turned blue, and I don't know why. When his hair turns to skin and then turns into skull, maybe I will want to hold it too, because how many skulls could I juggle? Or when I pass them through the open windows or see them as green as soon as the sun goes down. There are angels in this too. They are chewing through the walls tonight, and under it the sound of a man's voice so gentle, and under that there's a TV on two doors down. The people in the street carry skulls under their shirts, and roosters are making their way downstream, and the women are out there walking their cows. There are so many blue blankets on the lines that they cover the sky, and so I'm scared. So come here, kiss me, you fool. Well, you, I peeled for you, took it all the way down. On the floor, I was closer than I have ever been. The wind, the center stage of your mouth. When there was distance, there was still you calling. The leaf with your name in it. You, the branch falling down. Every rock I picked up was you. I carried you across states. I threw you into the sea. The dog held you in its mouth, and I had to pry you loose. And all that time, you, the head of the acorn, the space you took, the stick, the tongue you never gave back. When there wasn't you, there was you. So I lined you on the counter, licked you to see if there was salt or sugar on the rim. And then there was the fish in the tank. You, the bags were full. The rain crashed down. The sun stayed up. And every mountain was you looking up.
what was left. When the horse refused to come, and I called you to say that the horse is God, and she won't come, even though I am the woman with the apples in her hands, and I can't reach her. The mud's too thick, and I can't get my shoes too dirty since I'm a rental car after that accident. And I was crying from the far-off window, and the far-off window of the farmhouse, a baby was crying too. And I called you, because who else to call? And you said, how beautiful to be the woman with apples in her hands. So that's a little bit from that book. And actually, that idea of having this beauty with the apples in the hands, that actually came from Marianne. When my father passed, he went to Africa through the last years of his life and killed just about every animal that you can kill. he literally had elephant tusks in his game room. And he made one garbage can out of an elephant leg and another one a stool that you can sit on. And, you know, they would offer it to me when I visited. Like, do you want to sit on the dead elephant leg? I'm a vegetarian for a reason, you know. So needless to say, he ate up his entire, what would have been my inheritance. But I did get a 22-year-old horse that was brought to Kentucky. And so every time I go to this horse, I try to work out the issues with my father. And one time, since I didn't come see the horse for a couple weeks, she decided, I'm not going to come see you. And she was out in the field. And I was hysterical because all of a sudden, this horse is my father. And no, maybe this horse is God. And no, this horse doesn't want me. And the only person I could tell this to without seeming crazy was Mary Ann. And the only thing she said, well, and I said, I even had apples. And she said, well, you know, at least you were, you know, how beautiful to be the woman with apples in your hand. I'm like, is that the most beautiful thing you could have ever said to me? Thank you. It looks like I only have about 10 minutes, so let me see. I'll read a couple poems from the book that's coming out in November called Bird Blind. And essentially what it was is that I try to think about geography in kind of a spiritual way, and I think of it as a spiritual geography. After my father passed, I had a huge crisis, and I left my husband and drove to Maine with my huge Irish wolfhound and stayed in a one-room cabin next to a lake, and I wasn't coming back. we worked it out, but what ended up happening is that that entire year, while I was kind of recovering from my father's death and still trying to be a wife and keep my spirituality intact, I did a lot of running away. So, I mean, I went to Maine, where the first, where the sun sets at Cadillac Mountain, the last light, or no, the sun rises, the first light. And then I went all the way to the Olympic Peninsula in Washington, to Cape Flattery, where you see the last light setting. You know, Florida, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, all kinds of places. That year, I was everywhere, but in my skin. So I'll read a couple poems from this. The first one's called Cadillac Mountain. You taught me to read landscape as if my own skin stretched to the horizon. Trees crook as my arm, twist. I want to say, soothe me. When the flood comes, I hold on. Parts of me break loose, rush toward the sun. It happens so fast, so this is why I don't leave you a note. Buffeting. Today, the sea. A lighthouse and a picture of a wife in Victorian black dress next to the keeper, 1800s. Life was serious then. Survival took its deep turns. I watched families climb rocks and perform miracles of contentment. There is largeness here. Also, a dull shake like what is in me when I think of you. Somewhere in Colorado, a fire roars and makes the same sound as these waves crashing. Lake Wednesday. Two metal birds dangle from wire, mark the camp entrance. In the distance, a freshwater lighthouse blinks. Floodlights beam from the gatekeeper's cabin. A shoreline glows with bonfire. I notice every light since I left you. Wind glides the water as a skipped rock. All the current drifts my way, shakes a mesh of water weeds. Tomorrow, I will kayak this lake whose map knots and straightens as your spine. And perhaps you will feel the slice of my paddle blade. And I'll end with my new project, which is actually a series. I always write these tiny, small poems, and I try to challenge myself and try to expand and write more of a series. And so this is called Spring, or Take Hold and Remove Quickly. The deer count for the day, 32. Also, 6 hens and 1 strutting Jake. I read, marriage forms agreement through sympathy. And if not, admit misery. So today, identification is in the docket. Not purple-flowered weed, but hen bit. You see, in middle March, Dorothea could have spent more time understanding Casaubon. And in the movie of You, in the background, a purple flower, just that one small exception. I like that when you wrote to me today, you wrote blooming daffodils beside, I have made choices. You write, I hope it is looking like spring down your way. If season has language, this one, expectant. The sun in the barn bright, then not. A barrel of rock, a metaphor, then not. Because I haven't decided how long to carry your voice. So I'm looking into these high roofs, this big ceiling, a certain place on the hill. When I open my mouth, the sparrow fly in. The method is straight. Avoid the part with danger. And if there has to be worry, choose it. Okay, well, today the budding vine bothers me. The splotch of green I walk towards, too. And all of this, not quite. The rhododendrons waited a winter, so here I am. I snap off their buds. Take that. Because. New Guinea islanders believe women created the sun. I am seeing them reach from the highest trees. And I remind myself to study the land. There is so much to poke through, because when the kettle is hot. New Guinea islanders believe women hid sunflower between their legs so that they could cook. They believe men found that fire and stole it. The paper butterfly falls from the window. Another shape, then absence of shape to consider. Now here, listen to this. I'm on top of my fire, and I'm making my move. Okay, so the method is grief, not accumulation, but this is the afternoon I want. Learn how the birds keep it up with one branch, then another. The stump reminds me of a coyote I saw once under a certain moon. Spirea is another word for making a border a rightful place. Let's see how this chime breaks through. The horses stir in their stalls and hope for plenty. In the rafter, not a bat, but a girl squinting in a certain light. Sometimes the straw rains down. Sometimes a bit gets stuck behind my ear. A saw blade rusts in the brush. A daisy leans into repose. So if I choose praise, what follows? Now here I am listening. What isn't necessary is that sound in the bush, or have I lost this too? I don't know the sound a fox makes or what all the black things are under these leaves, but there's repetition above me. Blue that leads into other blue, like the hole the muskrats disappear into beside the creek. Verbs make beauty. So consider the darkness of this. And then there is the hall light I don't want to turn off, and all of this epic of woman with child or child at breast. The cheek stone, the cement wrist, and all the rest I've spent years praying to. So here's a balloon. Blow it up. See what dance it makes in the sky. You write, I wonder if you've made some choices. If I have, I choose the buzzard feather in your palm, the jar of angel wings we used to keep by the tea can, how we would mistakenly reach in, and how the thistle in our tea made us taste earth. A wren whistled me from sleep, a male with a paler red than a robin, and a flicker moved from bush to bush. I asked you what that trill was and what was calling. And in all of this subtraction, like your feather, the Omaha tribe believed that there was a burr woman who stuck herself to the back of a man and refused to let go. How close a sycamore seed is to a burr. Force and water, and what once was a bridge, and all that's delicate, trying to push up. So you're willing to live with me today. Was it the pucker of the brook? Was it me bending over to pick up that sycamore seed? Perhaps it was the root of the wild onion and how we couldn't describe why the waterfowl met our mind sound and settled us by its pool. There is always a bit of wind here, because what isn't trouble, we have made it so. But look, there's no mirror here for us to hold up, no way for us to re-understand, but to watch. Thank you. Yes, that is what I would do, is that I would just go back and forth of reading, meditating, and writing, and hiking. And I would just keep doing that over and over again. I was raised Catholic. I don't know what I am now. but I do meditate, and I love going and listening to the monks give their talks. I mean, they're just brilliant, especially at Gethsemane. I mean, some of them were stockbrokers in New York City, and others actually arrived at the monastery on horse, through a horse carriage, and they've been there. The one that arrived by horse carriage just passed away like 6 months ago. So they're fascinating people. But yes, I would make sure that I would try to slow down the pace of my mind and make the language take that pace. And so I would have to figure out the rhythm. They would even feed you. So you would have the prayers, which they have prayers. I think it starts at 3 a.m., which is vigils. And then the next one is around 5, and then they have another one at 6, which is usually their mass, and so on. So they pray constantly throughout the day, and the whole day is marked by bells and prayer and walking through the food line and... Yeah, it was, you know, and I just became obsessed for 4 years trying to go into that space. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Yeah, Lisa. Theories, but not convents.
Yes, actually, convents too. I would go to the Sisters of Loretto. They were good friends with Thomas Merton, and they have this 200-acre farm. And the best thing I love about Loretto is that the cows lick your hand. so I would love to go and talk with the cows, and they have these big tongues, and they lick your hand. And I would stay either in the farmhouse or on the fourth floor of the old boarding house, which was creepy and lovely. But yes, I found that nuns are amazing feminists. For example, at Mass there, they said, anyone can take communion. Just don't tell anyone that you're not Catholic. And I'm like, whoa! You know, so, yes. Convents, too.
I have a question about the reading. You know, following along in the book, you make a lot of revisions when you read. The only other person I've seen do that more is Reg McKnight. When he reads his fiction, he revises, like, every sentence that you've ever heard him read. It's amazing. So I was just wondering if you could talk about that a little bit. I mean, you should add a lot of conjunctions and transitions in.
Yeah, that's interesting. There, it really feels like there's a different kind of voice that's on the page versus the voice that's being spoken sometimes. And sometimes because I think on the page that it's taking such a slow pace, then some of the lines can be digested fully. But whenever I'm reading aloud, I kind of sink into the space of a voice speaking to the self or to a definite you. And so I try to make it more colloquial. Yeah. Yeah, but I do find myself revising a lot, and it scares me sometimes, because sometimes I'm like, will this work, you know, by the time I get to the end of the page? Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't have those revisions written in that you permanently do? You know, some people will do that. They'll write in there.
Yeah. I do on some of them in the longer poem, because I realized the first time I read that, people didn't know who Dorothea and Casaubon were. I know, so sad. So, I mean, there's things like that I've written in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Well, thank you so much for coming, and thanks for all my past teachers coming too.